Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for Just Thinking. I'm also the Chief Marketing Officer for NeuroPoints, a startup organization that is ready to take the world by storm. Brainstorming, that is, critical thinking and bridging the gap between human intelligence and artificial intelligence. Well, enough about that. Right now, I have a long-awaited guest. This is somebody that we've been working for months to get this thing scheduled, and it is happening now. Yes, folks, it is happening today. We have the great Ross Kimble here with us. And I'm not going to say much about Ross. I'm going to give him the opportunity to tell you about himself. So, Ross, take it from here.
Kevin, I have to let you know. I got to jump off right now. I got to jump off the call. I apologize. We got to reschedule.
You know, I'm flexible.
Wouldn't be the worst.
Yeah.
They said we couldn't do it, Kevin. They said it wasn't possible, but here we are.
We're meeting.
Thanks so much for having me. This is going to be a great time. Well, let's get into it. My name is Ross Kimble. I was an educator for years. I taught sixth grade. I was a teacher assistant. I was working in special education for a few years. And at the same time, I was doing comedy at night, specifically improv, long-form improvisation. So getting a suggestion from the audience and then putting a 30 to 45-minute show on that you'll never see again. You'll never see it again.
Right.
And that does two things for people. People go, how do you do that? Or also, that sounds terrifying. So during the day, I was hanging out with 11, 12-year-olds teaching. At night, I was doing comedy. And I found myself improving my communication, getting way better at connecting with people, not taking myself too seriously, while at the same time taking what I do seriously. And while my friends were, I wouldn't say making smarter choices, I would say they were just making, I don't know, long-term better choices. They were in the business world. I was asked to help them with presentations, or if they won an award, they would come up and ask, hey, Ross, can you help me with the speech? With my background, my performance background, I would say, yeah, let's do it. So long story short, I was doing comedy at night, had an opportunity to audition for SNL, Saturday Night Live, flew me out. You auditioned right on the stage. And a few weeks later, I got asked to be paid not to be on the show. Which is wild. I don't think that's ever happened before. So that happened, got me out to LA. Long story short, was put into really, really high pressure communication scenarios on camera, on stage, pitch meetings, all that stuff, and realized that effective communication and being clear and confident and concise is really about connection. And using my background in improv, and improv is not making it up as we go, because Kevin, it would be terrifying, being like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. What we're doing right now is we are here in the present. We're not worried about left or right or forward and backward. We're in the present. We're right here. I'm making a connection. And I trust you, Kevin. I know that you're going to make me look good. That's another pillar of improv. Well, we'll see how it goes, Kevin. We'll see how it goes. Right now, I'm feeling good about it.
As you should.
Those pillars of improv have helped me, not only helping educators, but now that I'm in the business world, helping people that are really making huge impacts in the world, that we're finding that communication, whether it's video, because it's not going away, Kevin, as we know, it's not going away, but being in the room, those two things, that's when things happen, when you are an effective communicator and actually people feel like you care and making that connection. So that's what I do now. I started a small company. When I say small, it's just me. And I'm a speaker, a workshop facilitator. I still do comedy. And that's something I love to do. I love to bring that into my workshops and my keynotes. I still write for TV and movies, still auditioning from, you know, as you said, off the record. I'm a Renaissance man. And I laughed because I know Renaissance people. And I guess I am that. I wear many hats. It's wild. It's wild.
Well, you are, because, you know, and just getting to know you over the past year, you've just done a little bit of everything. And one of the things I'm curious about, you talked about how your background in improv and performing has helped you in this business venture. I'm curious about your 6 years teaching. Were you in Chicago Public Schools?
For a few years, I was at Chicago Public Schools, and then I was at a school it was a private school. But I was in the city for about 7 years. So mixed bag, both.
Yeah, it's good. No, it's good that you had, you know, different environments, different experiences. You did regular ed, you did special ed. how did that help to shape you for the work you're doing? Because you're still teaching people, you're still an instructor, you're still coaching. So talk to us a little bit about how that shaped what you're doing now.
For me, I thought, and a lot of us think we're patient people until we're put in a position where we're like, oh, I am finding a short fuse on this. Why am I like this? And then you find out, oh, okay, this is my learning style, or this is, I don't really mesh with this personality. And in teaching in the world, more so what I found in teaching, where I was like, oh, okay, I'm reacting, I'm responding a certain way. And we talk about controlling the controllables. I can control how I respond to it. So another pillar of improv is we don't react, we respond. Because that reaction is this, and response is take it in, put it through whatever funnel you have to do, whatever sifter you have to put it through, and then respond back to it.
I was just going to say, to me, that sounds like by responding versus reacting, your amygdala is allowed to kind of shrink. So you could do that critical thinking that's necessary to come up with the humorous line or the humorous gesture or whatever it is. And if you're in reaction mode, then your amygdala is swollen and you can't think that quickly. Yes, no.
And you won't think that quickly. And going back to, I think with improv, a lot of people think, and it's just a general thing because that's what people know as a reference, is like, whose line is anyway? Or improv is only for comedy. The improv mindset is for everybody. And those pillars of yes ending, making sure the other person looks good, or responding, not reacting. If you're reacting, you're not listening. You're just waiting for the other person to be done so that way you can say your thing. And becoming a better listener, if I know taking an improv class is terrifying, but the one thing you'll realize if you stick through those 4 to 8 weeks, you'll become a better listener. 100%. 100%. So going back to the original question that you asked me, but this is, you'll find out this is how I have conversations where I'm okay with rabbit trails and coming back. Yep. And it wasn't more of a question. It was just more of you saying, how does that work with my yes. work now where I'm working with?
There was a question. Yes.
High performing adults,
yeah.
High performing business people.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of the same. We're knowing, okay, this person, this is their learning style, learning that and being open to communicate with that person. What's the best way for me to communicate with you? Especially if I'm working with CEOs or a sales team and we're jumping on a call to work on a presentation. Okay. What's the best way? Should I text you? Should I email you? Should I call you? What's the best way? And getting that out of the way, getting those things, those assumptions out of the way, so that way we're both on the same page, that changes everything. And I'm not perfect at it. I just know that when I do that, so many headaches are mitigated. I'm like, oh, well, I should have done that 3 weeks ago. Because now I'm not like, oh, how are they feeling? Because I'm one of those people like, I am a recovering people pleaser. And like, please like me, like me, like me. And so learning, like they've got another life. They're probably not thinking of you, Ross. They probably, yeah, Kevin, you weren't even thinking of me until like I emailed you being like, hey, let's set this up again. And knowing that Kevin still likes me, still wants to work with me. We have to do that. So I think it's learning those styles and then just knowing that people are people.
It was close. I almost like totally wrote you off. So we were like this close when you emailed me. So it's a good thing you emailed me when you did, because yeah, it was very, very close there.
Kevin, but, it was touch and go. I felt it. It was touch and go for a second.
Well, I figured you did. But anyway, I'm so glad you reached out. Glad we're having this conversation. And one of the things that we talked about off the record again is this whole idea of staying present and being in the moment. What does that mean for the work you're doing? What are some advice you have for people listening that are educators and maybe coming from other walks of life?
We are so bad at listening. We're so bad. We're so bad. And I consider myself decent at it. And there are times where I'm self-aware enough to know like, oh, I'm drifting off. I'm not even here yet. Or people have this superpower called ADHD where people can be talking. Kevin, you can be four words into your sentence. I know how it's going to end. So I know where we're going. So I'm just waiting for you to be done so I can talk instead of shift it down into third gear, get the thing out. Because a lot of times our questions can be answered if we just listen, stay present, and a lot of confusion. So I would say this, staying present will help you connect more with your students. And as you know, students, they sniff that out. They sniff out if you're fake. They know when you're not listening. You could look at them and be like this, and they can be like, all right, well, this is the last time I'm going to ask you a question because I know you're not even here. And students that see that teachers want to make a true connection, that teachers are there, present, like, what can I work with? Other students see that and say, oh, okay, that teacher wanted to help. My teacher wants to help me. So I'm going to be more apt to ask a question, to really take in and accept that no questions are dumb questions. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And having that support, that teacher support of that, again, that pillar of improv, making everyone around you look good. If your whole class has that improv mindset of not, we're making it up, we're not. No, it's just support, the yes ending, especially when you have that ideation where it's like, okay, we got to come up with a plan, or we have some presentations, or having those conversations. If you are splitting up your, I did this all the time. You're splitting up your classroom in presentation groups, going over the improv mindset. Okay, let's think about it. And not saying improv mindset, because some kids, like all of us, we go improv, making it up. Just say a blanket statement. Okay, we're doing presentations. Remember, here are the rules. We're making everyone look good in the presentation. We're yes ending ideas. Okay, there are no bad ideas when you come up with ideas. All right. That way, sometimes you have to have the bad ideas come out first for those good ideas to happen. And we all know that. And yeah, I think that's my piece on that, just staying present, because it does open up, the staying present just opens up all these other areas. And I think that's why I get excited about it, because I was so bad at this, Kevin. Kevin, I was so bad at this. I was so bad at small talk. I was so bad because I was up in my head. I was thinking, oh, what's Kevin thinking? And what the work I'm doing now is I work with high performers that have to get up in front of people, and they're like making big moves in life, and they're doing this thing. And because you're good at what you do, you're asked to speak. And then they get up in front of people and they look like they don't know what they're talking about, when in reality they do. But you have to, another thing I would tell teachers, if you're getting to like presentations, or students have to get up in front of people, remind everybody, especially the speaker, but it's a blanket statement. As teachers, we have to do that. Even though we're speaking to one, we're speaking to everybody. It's that little mind trick that we do, which I think is very important. And I did it all the time. But letting everybody know that whoever's up here is brave, A, and two, everyone out here in the seats is rooting for you. They want you to do great. They want you to do great.
Hey, Ross, I want to piggyback on that a little bit.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was a teacher, too, for 10 years before becoming a principal and getting into the other side of supporting educators for the past many years. But when I was a teacher in my hometown, my principal knew that I had a background in performing, so he built a stage in my classroom. So he's like, Kevin, you need a stage. Well, it was amazing how just like 12 inches above the floor, it was another universe. Students would stand up on that platform and they were transformed. So real quickly, one day I had this boy, he was special ed, head down on his desk every day. He was not motivated. He was not, you know, engaged or anything. I thought, what is going on? Is he not sleeping? Is he depressed? What's going on? So one day our reader had this skit that was Little Red Riding Hood. And so I'm assigning the roles. And I said, okay, there's this role. Okay, this is a boy's role. This is a girl's role. Blah, blah, blah. I go back and forth. He's like, I want to be the grandmother. I said, no, you can't be the grandmother. I have only so many boys' roles and so many girls' roles. I want to be the grandmother. No, you cannot be the grandmother. I'm sorry. I've got to, you know, dole these out. He said, I want to be the grandmother. So I said, okay, fine, whatever. Be the grandmother. And Ross, it was such a pivotal moment for that boy and for me and for my students, because he got up on that stage. And what I discovered is this boy, who did not lift his head off of his desk for months, stood on that stage and he was a natural born comedian. He had timing. He had gestures. He had the voice expression. He had all of it. We're sitting there crying, laughing at how great it was. And I thought, how stupid was I as the teacher to make him have to fight that hard to have that opportunity. And we did a play every year that we wrote. So we did lots of improv. We wrote all the stuff. And he was the Cowardly Lion that we did. This dates me, but Saturday Night Live, the what was it? The liar. Yeah, that's a ticket. Yeah.
Oh, John Lovitz.
Yeah,
John Lovitz. That is a great sketch that no one talks about. Yeah,
that's what I get. And so this kid played it so well, but I'm going to share with you, I'm going to go kind of up to here, but that young man the next year was tragically killed in a car accident. And you talk about being present, and you talk about, you know, putting people in situations where they can adapt and lifting them up and making them look good. He had the time of his life in the play, and then he wrote his own skits and all this stuff. Had that moment not happened, he not fought for it, we might never have seen that in his life. He may never have experienced that. We may never have discovered he was a natural born comedian. And so anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there for what it's worth.
I love that. And I'm going to yes and what you just said. It is so important everywhere, but especially in school, to have that atmosphere of I want to try things, or I'm going to put myself out there. And good for him to fight for that. Like, no, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. It's powerful. It's powerful because you don't know. We don't know until we try something. Or it's always, I remember my second year at a public school. I was an assistant, and sixth grade assistant. And it was field day. And so, you know, we were playing all the regular field game stuff. And the quietest kid in the class didn't talk that much. We didn't really think this person was athletic. They won every foot race. And we're like, what? And they ended up being like a track star, like a few years down the road in high school. We just didn't know, didn't have the opportunity to know if they liked it or not. And afterwards, it was so funny because they won every race and they're like, yeah, I guess. And we're like, no, this is a talent. No, like you need other people in here to be like, no, this is actually something you should pursue.
Well, let's shift to the, we kind of already went there a little bit with the whole idea of improv, but let's talk about the importance of developing an improv mindset.
Going back to what we just said, improv has a connotation of, oh, I got to be the fastest. I got to be the funniest. I got to be quick on my feet. And that's an element of it. And I would say that is a product of it if you do it long enough. But the core elements of improv are really just trying to be a better human. So at the core of it, as we all know, because everyone's comedy IQ has increased because of social media, we've all heard of yes and. So really understanding that yes and is not just yes anding everything, but accepting what is in front of us, good or bad, and adding to it. Adding to it. So a lot of people think it's yes and has to be a positive thing. No, it's actually accepting what is in front of us. So it could be an issue, or it's like, hey, we can't find enough crayons for everybody. That is what is happening. And what we can do, can we snap a few of them in half and hand them out? Could that be like the ideation happening? So that's a yes and that everyone learns. Another pillar of it that is super important, and we talked about it, and this is something that I deal with when I teach five-year-olds. My five-year-old, actually, right now in my own home, two 72-year-old CEOs, and it's making sure everyone looks good. Support, supporting. How can I make this person look good? And a lot of times it's asking, hey, how do you like affirmation? Or how do you like being praised in public, in private? How do you enjoy meetings? Would you rather this be an email? Of course, the answer is yes. Or would you rather have a smaller group? So making that other person look good, setting them up, introducing them to people, talking about them when they're not in the room, knowing their strengths. And that comes back to communication, communicating and seeing their strengths. Okay, I know they're great at this. This other person isn't as good, or they have some sort of other skill that'll help. How can I put them together? That way we can get to our North Star, our goal in the organization or wherever we're doing. So that's the other one. Yes, and supporting one another. Listening to understand, not just listening to hear. And that's a cliche that's been poached a little bit through business, but that's That's an improv. That's an improv thing. Those are like 4,000 improv games are right there with listening and staying present, which I think is one and the same, because you can't listen and not be present. You have to be present and listen. The other one is just follow the fun. Follow the fun. So if something's happening, that goes back to the SN. So if we're in a scene and there's elephants painting, and we know that elephants don't paint, and now they're like painting the wall, and now one of them talks, it's like, wait, what's happening? What happens is, seeing that on stage or in a conversation, that like, whatever you, I'm gonna eat peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Oh, I hate peanut butter and jelly. Oh, it's gross. We've had those conversations where like, well, I don't like talking to you because you're negative all the time. It's said, oh, great. Even if I was deathly allergic to peanut butter, Kevin, I'm like, oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. I'm more of a grilled cheese person. That's not me being mean. It's like, oh, that's great. That's not a good for you. That's not a, oh, good for you, Kevin. It's, oh, that sounds awesome. I'm going to do that grilled cheese. Yeah. So staying in that positive. So those are really the main four. Staying present. And then also it's making strong choices. I think we see that in not only the classroom, but in business. A lot of times people, because of the scarcity mindset or the scarcity of, oh, there's a lot of change happening. That goes back to the yes and, accepting that change, knowing that we can be malleable a little bit, that we can really trust our skills. We can trust the people around us, because again, if we all have the mindset, if everyone here has the mindset of yes anding, listening to understand, not to hear. Also making everyone look good. If my job in my head is to make Kevin look good, and ditto to you, Kevin, you're making me look good. We can't fail. We can't fail. Not in the sense of failure, but in the failure of, oh, I know we're on the same page. There's not going to be combative bone in our brain or body.
As you're talking about that, you make me think about this continuum that I always followed when I was in the classroom, a principal, and then working with educators. But the whole idea of, it starts with relationship before you can get to relevance, and then ultimately achieve rigor, you know, high levels of performance. So what you're talking about is the importance, like, I can't make things relevant, i.e. grilled cheese, until I get to know you and discover and listen and hear the fact that you like grilled cheese. Now I can work that into our conversations. I can have you over for lunch and make sure I make you a great grilled cheese sandwich, and you're like all over it. And now you're in your best mode possible to be successful and to achieve at high level. So relationship, relevance, rigor from an education standpoint, to me is a lot of what you're talking about here.
Yeah. And that goes back to what you just said, relationship. It's truly about connection. And that's what I'm saying. The next 3 to 5 years, if we can't be more human, kids are going to sniff that out and they're going to go somewhere else.
So speaking of being human, improv, all these pieces, you've done a lot. I want you to touch on some things here that will resonate with people. I mean, we're talking about things that are relevant and that kind of thing. You're an Emmy Award winner, yes?
Nominated. We were nominated four what? Times and we lost four times.
Were you those people like looking there and like looking like you're smiling for the other people that they won? And you're like,
oh yeah, Kevin, I was super happy for everyone that won. Yeah. Why? Next question.
Okay. So Emmy nominated, but tell us a little bit about, because that project has some improv involved. That was a very unique, I watched it before I knew you. So it was pretty
fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for watching. What we're talking about, if you're not sure what we're talking about, Jury Duty is on Amazon, and it is essentially what we did was we Truman showed someone. So everyone on the show is an actor. Everyone is a show on the actor except for Ronald. And it was incredible. And we found him, when I say we, the production found him through a Craigslist ad. 3,000 people applied because it just went out there like you couldn't have been on Jury Duty, and it's a documentary about the Jury Duty system. Which, if you're not a part of any of that world, you don't know that that's illegal. Like, you can't film that as a documentary. So we found Ronald. We were with him for 3 weeks. It's 8 episodes. The last episode we show you how we made it. And my audition process was intense. Everyone that made this show, it was pretty intense, but I didn't want to do a prank show. That was my thing. I don't want to do a prank show. And I think a lot of people, when they hear this, they're like, oh, everyone's an actor except for one person. Man, this must be hilarious. It is hilarious. What sold me, what made me want to do it, was the producers and the director said, Ross, this is a hero's journey. We're taking Ronald, who doesn't like to speak up. It's really hard to make decisions. We get to see him interact with people that are just out of control, and you get to see someone who is whole, so wholesome that makes you think, oh, okay, well, I need to start acting like Ronald in those situations. And it's super funny. James Marsden plays James Marsden, who becomes a part of the jury, and it was improvised. Every day we'd have bullet points to get to. There was an outline of a script, but 90% of it was improvised. And when he wasn't in the room or when he wasn't talking to us, Ronald, when I'm saying that, the hero, we call him the hero, but Ronald, we had to create our storylines because there were 30 cameras rolling and we were mic'd up all day. So we would come up with these storylines. And eventually, you don't see it in the show, but my friend Kirk Fox and I eventually became fire jumpers. By the eighth day, we talked about jumping out of planes and putting out forest fires. We talked about our passion for Dave Matthews Band. I don't know any Dave Matthews Band songs. It was cut from the show, but Ronald heard that. Ronald is a huge Dave Matthews fan. And he goes, oh, what's your favorite song? And I go, the one that's like, and he goes, oh, yeah, I love that. And I'm like, this guy's so nice. He didn't call me out. He goes, oh, yeah, I love that.
That's
But that goes back to it wouldn't have worked if we weren't on the same page of supporting each other, making the other people look good, knowing when to have your moment and not have your moment, and trust the other people. Trust is a big thing in having the improv mindset as well. That trust of this person is here for a reason. They were hired for this thing. They were put in this position. They were part of this puzzle. I need to trust them until you see that you need to step in. And I see that in the people I work with now, in sales, people that own their own businesses, people that are doing, I see the same thing that I saw in my teaching world, where it's people think they know the right thing to do, and they're not willing to take a moment and be like, can I just hear the plan? Or what was the situation? Or I just want to hear everything until I have my input. They want to put their input right away. Well, I would have done this way. You should have done it this way. It's that wagging the finger, and no one wants to be around that. Again, you don't feel support, you get defensive, and then that's when we start reacting instead of responding.
Amen. Wow, that is really, really powerful. We're coming close to the close of our time for this particular episode. But before I take it to that last bit about what else are you just thinking about, I am curious, Ross, about your school experience and what, if anything, or who, if anybody, helped shape this person I'm talking to right now on this podcast. Anyway.
A lot of people shaped who you see in front of you. School wise, I was not the best at school. Although there were sections like everyone that's not quote unquote great at school, there are pockets or lanes where you're great at and you excel. So in U.S. history, and yeah, I'd say history and English, like the writing, I was like a year ahead of everybody. Okay, in math and science, I was 2 years below everybody. So my senior year, and I played volleyball. I played year round, so I played at a pretty high level. And I vividly remember Kevin with my varsity jacket on with all these patches, my senior year, and I'm sitting down with a bunch of sophomores in math, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta get my life right. But my history teacher. And I was the home ec student of the year my senior year. So like life sciences, that really helped me out. But looking back on the teachers that helped me out, the teachers that understood where I was, the teachers that challenged me, in a way where I wanted to chase down that challenge instead of like bump up against it. And there were ways that they voiced that to me. And that went back to how does Ross communicate the best? Or how does he receive that the best? Or how does he like to be communicated with? And I was always a daydreamer and comedy. I was always a fan of comedy. And a few teachers understood that. And they knew that I loved Laurel and Hardy, the Three Stooges, the Bowery Boys, I Love Lucy, Bewitched, all that stuff, because I was not allowed to watch anything else. I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons. Wasn't allowed to watch Friends. So they understood that. And that I think because of I matched their pop culture IQ with things. They're like, okay, Ross, it's like this, it's like this. And they would make great analogies as well.
Love that.
And a lot of coaches too. A lot of coaches that were teachers helped me shape who I am today. I overthought everything. I overthought everything, Kevin. That was the worst.
Well, it sounds like it's kind of all coming full circle for you, though. We talked about overthinking, but my sense is that any type of thinking, for the most part, is positive. Maybe it wasn't, at the time you're overthinking, but right now it feels like all these pieces are falling into place. As I've gotten to know you over the past year and hearing about your move from LA to Georgia, and you talk about making some really bold, big choices, what you're doing professionally, with the work that you're doing with your own coaching. There, but also still auditioning and still honing your craft as a comedian, as an actor, as a writer, and as a dad of young kids, raising young kids. I mean, dude, that's a lot.
I'm glad I had those times where I overthought everything. I was in my own head. I stalled who I wanted to be and how I wanted to communicate, because now I know when I work with people, I can truly say I know how it feels. I know how it feels to be this way. And there is another side. It does not have to be this way. And I don't do this. I've never done this, and I should, but just writing down all the things and the wins and the losses and like those big moments and that move from LA to Atlanta, which we were like kicking and screaming from, and I knew I had a shift, and I just knew that the Lord opened up this lane of work and people wanted to work with me, and here we are, and here we are, and I'm so thankful that I have an amazing wife who supports it, and two lovely kids who see it. Even though they're young, they see it. It's and this is not alone. I have like 40 to 50 people behind me that supported me from day one. And it's incredible. It's incredible, Kevin. And you're one of those people.
Well, I appreciate that, Ross. I'm so glad we stumbled upon one another. And I do want to give you an opportunity before we close out this episode to share anything else about which you're just thinking that I didn't give you a chance to say. So, brother, you get the last word.
Well, I appreciate it. It took Kevin and I 17 years to get this podcast down and this interview. I mean, and it was mostly me, actually all of me, canceling. But we're here. My last word to everyone listening or watching would be this: that we are all able to improvise. Every one of us is an improviser in the sense of every day we have bullet points. Getting this done. I got some things in my calendar. We're getting this lesson plan done. I know I got to meet here. I got to meet here, meet here. And as we all know, life happens. We have a left turn over here. We got a right turn over here. Somehow on the road, there's a moose. So now I got to do a detour. Knowing that we can be agile, knowing to yes and yourself, knowing making those choices, again, supporting one another and being and trusting yourself. That's the one thing that we don't do enough, and I'm speaking to myself, is trusting your ability and your skill that'll get us through that and communicating that to people. So if there is a thing, if there is a hiccup, communicating that instead of being up in your head because no one can read your mind, communicating that. Okay, this happened. We're accepting that this is happening, and these are the choices that we're going to do down here, or this is what we're going to do to get to our ultimate goal. So communication is at the core of everything that I do, whether it's comedy, writing, coaching, speaking, doing workshops, facilitating improv workshops. It's all at the core about communication. And that's going to become more and more important as we go on, because a lot of people are great in the room, but a lot of people are not great on camera because, number one, we don't like seeing ourselves, but also we're not aware of a lot of things. So getting good on camera is another thing as well. So those are the two things as well, I would say. Communication is at the core, but also just getting better at video. That's all I'm thinking about, because I meet so many people that are awesome.
Yeah.
On a call, and they're like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, yeah, right. Uh-huh.
And you're like, oh, this is not right. Who I met on LinkedIn.
Well, COVID helped with that, because when I shifted to doing everything remotely, I got in front of the camera, and you know who your best critics are your kids and your spouse, who will just, you know, if you thought you were getting a big head, they'll just shrink that down pretty fast. So, hey, brother, we do need to sign up for today, but if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you if they're interested in working with you or having you do some coaching or some keynote speaking or whatever?
Sure. Thanks. You can go to rosskimble.com or showupbettertoday.com. You can find my stuff there. Look at what I do and reach out. Or if you just want to talk, I like talking.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. Bye.